Hello everyone and welcome to another video here on the Second Day in Extra channel, or if you're listening on the audio, and if you are, well, in terms of podcast, but if you are listening on the podcast, we have a few things that we're going to show you, so I'd urge you to come on the YouTube channel to see the pictures. But as always, I'm joined by Patrick Blake of How Do Cycling and one third of Echelon Cycling Podcast. Patrick, first day of Tirreno, the usual short time trial that we are so used to. And I mean, what exactly happened?
It was a really interesting start. We usually see the TT at the end of Tirreno, but they've kind of moved it to the start of the race in the last couple of years. And it didn't disappoint. We had some big favorites going into this race, including Filippo Ganna, Magnus Sheffield, Jonas Vingegaard. Yeah, there's a lot of big names coming into this time trial, and it's going to also help decide a little bit of the GC standings early on, going into some of the mountain stages later on in the week. And it's a very fast course, and it was quite a surprise. We had some very early winners. I mean, Jonas Vingegaard was probably the fifth off the ramp or something like that. I won't spoil kind of like the big, I don't know, elephant in the room. I mean, it is pretty much as big as an elephant, so it's pretty ungainly, this thing. But yeah, Jonas set off and did a very good time, but then he was quickly toppled by Kevin Vokola, who finished about 5 seconds ahead of him. And he was also toppled by Søren Vanenschold, who did a very good performance and ended up finishing inside the top 10 at the end of the day. And then we came on to some of the bigger favourites later on. Juani Juso put in an incredible time. Yeah, he beat Jonas by some margin, and is definitely looking like one of the best kind of positioned GC riders going into later in the week. However, we didn't really see that many big challenges. Sheffield went off, and he was looking like probably one of the only people who could beat Juani Juso. Unfortunately, about 2.5 kilometers in, he fell off, just overcooked a corner, came in too fast. And this was only 2.5 minutes into his effort, so that's a big shame, considering that Sheffield finished about 30 seconds down. People are estimating that he probably lost somewhere around 25-ish seconds in that crash, if not a little bit more. So Sheffield could have really been a big contender for today, but it's very sad to see that he crashed. So unfortunately, Sheffield crashed, but his teammate, Filippo Ganna, was still to come in the day. And once he set off, obviously he didn't do great in Algarve a couple of weeks ago, but he was only down by 2 seconds at the intermediate. And come the end, he was only 1 second down on the eventual winner, who, as the top 10 follows, it was Juani Juso who took the victory ahead of Filippo Ganna by just 1 second. Then it was Ethan Vernon in third place, 12 seconds down. Jonathan Milan in fourth, also 12 seconds down. Then Joseph Czerny, Søren Vanenschold, one of the early runners. Antonio Tiberi, the Italian sniper, came seventh. Kevin Vokola in 8th, Jonas Vingegaard in 9th, and Romain Grégoire in 10th place, Scott, who finished on the same time as Jonas, 22 seconds down. I mean, what do we want to talk about first? The GC gaps or the elephant in the room?
Go on, Patrick. I feel like that you alluded me to it as well. I mean, all of cycling Twitter went crazy.
Yeah.
We've seen some helmets in our time, in the last few years, like the POC helmet. Also, we've come accustomed to the Sodal Quickstep helmet. And now this monstrosity.
From Giro, however you want to say it. They announced this helmet, which looks or can only be described as like the front of a shark, basically. The idea being that when somebody has their hands on the kind of TT bars, there's this gap between the sort of the hands and the rider's kind of body, and this helmet fills this void and essentially acts as an aero fairing, which just kind of makes me want to puke saying that word. It's taken aero to a whole new extreme, isn't it? We, like you say, we've seen the emergence of oversized helmets, really from like the Ineos kind of inspiration from that. But this is just a whole different level. You know, helmets have got kind of ridiculous the last couple of years. I mean, it's not long ago that Kask released the road helmet, which covers the tips of ears, which I was already annoyed enough about. But this is awful. And I think that 97% of people agree that it is an absolute crime against the sport what's going on. I don't think anybody really likes it. What do you think about it, Scott?
I mean, I think it looks absolutely hideous. It's ridiculous. I'm no fan of the puck helmet, but like this is just, yeah, and it looks like the, I think it was like in one of those spoof comedies where they make fun of Star Wars and they have like a huge helmet, and that's what this looks like. I just, yeah, I know we have to talk about the time trial as well, but like this has taken all our attention. Yeah, we haven't even mentioned Bahrain Victorious. They also came out with something looking a bit ridiculous, but not as ridiculous. So they were a bit shielded by this Melissa bike. But Vingegaard, well, he didn't win the time trial in Gran Camino. They didn't have it there for Gran Camino. I'm surprised they unveiled it for Tirreno, to be honest. I thought, yeah, I don't know. They knew this was going to make a big splash, let's be honest.
Yeah, but I mean, going on to, obviously, like you said, let's talk about the TT. Jonas finished...
Nothing about Bahrain? You don't want to touch on their ridiculous helmet?
Well, that's because the only person of note who wore it was the Italian sniper.
But it apparently didn't help anything, that Miss Melissa Blake helmet, because...
Well, yeah, exactly. Because Jonas finished ninth in the TT, 22 seconds down. It just seems, like you say, it just seems... I'm not sure if it actually helped that much. I think it'd be really interesting to see what the aero gains of it are. You know, so I'm sure somebody will make a video sometime soon as to how fast it is. But, yeah, Jonas finishing ninth. I mean, he is, like, more of a climber, of course, but I think we're all just very accustomed to Jonas putting in these insane TT performances in a Grand Tour setting. But I guess you have to put it into context of Jonas does really good TTs in Grand Tours, but most of his more dominant ones come later on in a Grand Tour when everyone's a little bit tired, and therefore, I don't think it's exactly like for like. You know, people obviously recover differently throughout a Grand Tour. Maybe Jonas just recovers better. So it's interesting to see how he stacks up at kind of like completely fresh, especially against another big GC contender like Juan Ayuso. I mean, it's over a 10-kilometer time trial, which isn't, that's not long. He lost 22 seconds to Ayuso, which, that's just, it's mental. But Ayuso, he beat, you know, Ganna, Vernon, Milan, Valenschold, guys who are a lot bigger than him, but he's just super aero. And Ayuso, perhaps his TT is just, was underrated before today. And I don't think I expected 22 seconds to be the gap between him and Jonas. And is it going to make it difficult for Jonas to win this race, do you reckon? 22 seconds is, it's not a massive gap, and you know, the mountains will decide it, but it's certainly, you know, round one goes to Ayuso in UAE.
Yeah, for sure. It puts pressure on this Melissa bike, for sure. We talked about how strong their team is, and yeah, I think they really need to be on the offensive. And I mean, Jonas has been looking in great form, not against the likes of Juan Ayuso, who I think is a second tier, like not quite a Galactico, but like in that second high tier. And yeah, we saw him win time trials in, was it Tour de Romandie and in the Tour de Suisse as well. So it's not his first time trial. And yeah, I think he's won more time trials than he has mountaintop finishes on the elite. Don't you think this is going to mean nothing if Jonas puts in like a savage, brutal attack? Or I think this makes it more interesting. Tirreno will be more interesting. In the Echelon Cycling podcast, we all wrote this race off and said, this is Vingegaard, he's going to win by like 3 minutes. I'm not so sure now.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's I don't think it's a certainty. And like you say, it's good for the race because it means that Jonas is going to have to attack. It's not going to be, he's in the blue jersey and he can just play it defensive, which he might have done, but now he has to attack. He has to beat Ayuso on the road to win this race now. So I think, like you say, it's really good for the race. I do question, maybe Ayuso could do something in this race. I think, is it out of the question? I mean, Ayuso's pretty fast in a sprint as well. It wouldn't surprise me if he went for some bonus seconds or anything more to try and increase his gap up towards 30 seconds. And, you know, if you're saying 30 seconds gap going into the mountains could a Yuzo hang on to that? It's possible. So all of a sudden, like you say, we wrote this race off, and I think a lot of people did. But a Yuzo's fantastic TT is really making this race a little bit more enticing to watch from a GC perspective.
But I mean, Patrick, that's kind of the winners. Juan Ayuso, Ethan Brenner, like you said as well, good ride from him. And Jack Hindley was quite good as well in the short distance, considering he's someone we don't really think of as a good time trialist. But in terms of who the big losers are, Carapaz had a bit of a difficulty in when he came out. We saw how people, obviously first day, so people are trying to gauge when would be the best time to start, hence why, like you said, Jorgos Vingegaard was one of the first riders. But out of the GC guys, who's been a real big loser here?
I agree. I think Carapaz is one, but I'd say that everyone else is fairly there. I mean, Pidcock probably as well didn't put in that great of a TT. I'm not sure where Tao ended up finishing, but I think he's probably quite mid-pack as well. I think Mas did good to the first time check, but yeah, him, Mas, Bardet as well, not particularly great. I think Del Toro was pretty mid-pack as well. So I think that generally everyone was, you know, everyone's probably within kind of like 40 seconds, but I do think that, you know, some people who are 45, 50 seconds out are going to be struggling. But I don't think there are any massive losers today. I just think that Ayuso is the big winner. I think that's probably the best way to put it.
And, I mean, final word on that helmet?
Burn it. The UCI needs to ban that, fast. Not because it's cheating, but because it is absolutely a crime against the sport. It's a crime against humanity, verging, to be honest with you. It's awful. It really is. And it pains me that somebody out there is paid to develop something like this, and that the aesthetic of the sport is just completely sacrificed for the sake of marginal gains. Just saddens me a little bit.
And that's probably €300 as well for this hideous atrocity.
Yeah. If I see somebody rock up to that to a Club 10, I am throwing a bead on it. Yet. Yeah. Right. Warning.
People have been warned. But anyways, that's basically it for our first of two recaps here today. So make sure to come back for Paris-Nice. Yeah, where it's hard work today. And also, we have the Echelon Cycling Podcast episode 58 coming out on the Echelon channel. So Echelon Cycling Podcast channel. So look out for that. But with that, thank you very much for watching. Subscribe to the channel as well. And check out Patrick's channel in the description. But with that, see you for Paris-Nice.